2 days ago by Sue, who we work with in our organization, Third Space Coaching. And Justin's been working with us for a year with a client of his, and this incredible narrative felt like what was needed to be brought today, because it feels like such an expression of our work in the world. And just, I think, for all of us, is an amazing source of wisdom. So that is how come we're bringing this source, and how come we're a little bit late today, but we are very pleased, as always, to be with you. And maybe Justin can say hi, and then we'll get reading.
Yeah, I'll say hello. I'm very glad to be doing this again, week 41 of this ongoing practice of ours. And like Lizzie says, this narrative seems like a big invitation into the kind of work that we're very committed to, and maybe what's really called for in the world right now. So Lizzie, shall I read and then you can read? So this is what we're reading today, is a short piece about the goddess of never not broken. Her name is Akhilandeshvari. Akhilandeshvari represents the kinds of things that people shy away from. You may have bumped into her occasionally, hidden in the dark alleyways of life, but turned your gaze away. You've likely fallen into her embrace once or twice, in hospitals, at work, watching the news, or in your car, but broke away as quickly as possible. She's the kind of goddess you don't want to take home to meet your mother. She'd give your mother nightmares, but her power is unparalleled. Akhilandeshvari translates as never not broken. She shows us the power and opportunity of being broken into pieces by heartache, disaster, great fortune, and other life changes and traumas. However, she takes this to the furthest extreme, purposefully keeping herself broken wide open, allowing herself to flow with every current, creating and fragmenting and recreating herself endlessly. She steadfastly refuses to paste herself together into a stable form, shunning the limitations that she'd have to abide and the false identities that would hide reality. She rides on a crocodile, the very survival fear that kept most of us chained to the known and routine, is her flying carpet. She's not controlled by the need to keep her identity consistent or even alive. She dances and spins and breaks herself into shards of light, tossing out new possibilities for herself, like flower petals from a cherry tree. The goddess, never not broken, promises that the greatest magic is in the transformative moments, the heartbreak, the uncertainties, the pause before we hit the ground, and what we do with ourselves after we land. She is the goddess of surrendering to change, and we are getting to know her well these days. It's normal to fear and resist change, but Akhilandeshvari whispers to us also of freedom, liberation from the past, from habits and wounds, from stifling routines, from everything that was once good but has become a burden or a prison. Liberation indeed from all the illusions of the ego. She is in the same instant the personification of destruction and rebirth. But not like Kali the Destroyer, who levels us all with her sword. Akhilandeshvari yields to the destruction of herself, her ego, and self-identity, so that she can remain in contact with truth, the divine source that is manifesting itself as one individual.
Thank you, Justin. Okay, I'm going to read now. I know I disappear from the screen, everybody, so I'm sorry about that, but I'm on my phone. So here we go, Akhilandeshvari. She represents the kind of things that people shy away from. You may have bumped into her, occasionally hidden in the dark alleyways of life, but turned your gaze away. You've likely fallen into her embrace once or twice, in hospitals, at work, watching the news, or in your car, but broke away as quickly as possible. She's the kind of goddess you don't want to take home to meet your mother. She'd give your mother the nightmares, but her power is unparalleled. Pronounced Akhilandeshvari, Akilandeshvari translates as never not broken. She shows us the power and opportunity of being broken into pieces by heartache, disaster, great fortune, and other life changes and traumas. However, she takes this to the furthest extreme, purposely keeping herself broken wide open, allowing herself to flow with every current, creating and fragmenting, recreating herself endlessly. She steadfastly refuses to paste herself together into a stable form, shunning the limitations that she'd have to abide and the false identities that would hide reality. She rides on a crocodile. The very survival fear that keeps most of us chained to the known and routine is her flying carpet. She's not controlled by the need to keep her identity consistent or even alive. She dances and spins and breaks herself into shards of light, tossing out new possibilities for herself like flower petals from a cherry tree. The goddess Never Not Broken promises that the greatest magic is in the transformative moments, the heartbreak, the uncertainties, the pause before we hit the ground, and what we do with ourselves after we land. She is the goddess of surrendering to change, and we're getting to know her well these days. It's normal to fear and resist change, but Akilandeshvari whispers to us also of freedom, liberation from the past, from habits and wounds, from stifling routines, from everything that once was good but has become a burden or a prison. Liberation, indeed, from all the illusions of the ego. She is, in the same instant, personification of destruction and rebirth, but not like Kali the Destroyer, who levels us all with her sword. Akilandeshvari yields to the destruction of herself, her ego, and self-identity, so that she can remain in contact with truth, the divine source that is manifesting itself as one individual.
You're back.
Hello.
Wonderful. You know, one of the things that was really striking me as you were reading this, Lizzie, was the power, two things. So one was the power of narratives in our lives, how we come to know ourselves and what we know ourselves as can make such a big difference in how we approach everything and how we respond. And Akilandeshvari is a wonderful, in many ways, wonderful invitation to all of us. But you know, the thing that was striking me the most was there's a way of reading her as a goddess, and this built into this description of her is sort of like her endless capacity to change and be reborn and to include all the brokenness. And I love that. But I actually think there's a much more ordinary way in which this is just true of us all the time, without, you know, without having to fly on a crocodile and without all of that. The truth is about all of us is that we're never not broken. So I heard you read this less as an aspiration, like how could I be like her, and more like how can I tell the truth on myself? And the truth is, there's a way in which I'm, if I really look, there's a way in which I'm always heartbroken. There's a way in which I'm always far from any image of perfection I might have. There's a way in which I'm always hurt and incomplete. There's a way in which I'm always being thrown into something new. And I know that this has been so true of me, and is still very often true of me, is that in the moments when I pretend that that's not the case, which mostly involves for me looking good or telling people I'm okay, or trying to look competent or skillful or knowledgeable or something, the biggest cost in it is that I lose contact with myself. Like I'm working hard all the time to put on some kind of display, but I think even more importantly than that, for me anyway, is I lose contact with other people. That knowing ourselves as broken and beautiful, like we're never not broken, and that's the beauty of being a human being, and knowing everyone else like this is such a path into the kind of the necessary intimacy and contactfulness that we need. And it's so hard because maybe this is just me, but I imagine this is many of us. We imagine that if we let ourselves be real in this way with other people, that's when we'll lose ourselves and lose contact, and it's exactly the other way around.
Yeah, I feel really similar to that, just in the reading of it. I feel like it's like an articulation of a way of being in the world that speaks of an openness to the beneath of things, and to see how we can interpret the difficulties we're in as openings rather than something that's not human or not right. And I was so moved when I saw the pictures that you and Stu showed me, and also the reading various sources of the narrative. And it feels like a huge articulation. And we're finishing this year of our professional coaching program, and it feels like an articulation of the whole of the thing that we've been really teaching. You know, so it's kind of the timing of it as well is really interesting to me, because it feels like our whole work in our life, and I think something that Third Space stands for is to stand in and be in and cultivate and be aware of this never not brokenness at any time or always, and to see those things that might be a source of shame as openings into this, into life itself. So when we're so terrified about saying that thing about us that might have, we might perceive that people might be judgmental of it, or they might not like us anymore, or they might think we're weird, or, you know, anything that gives us that feeling of feeling like we're different or excluded from societal norms or relationship norms that we hold. It's like those are the invitations into this realm. And if you like, the stronger the shame, the deeper the contact with whatever it is that this story is inviting us into, that kind of contactfulness. And I think this is just again and again like such a big learning for me, and I need to keep being taught it and keep cultivating it for myself and being community around it, which is that whatever I'm facing, whatever I'm in, it can be part of this. It doesn't need to be exiled. And if there's shame involved, it's kind of a sure sign that that's a good direction to go in, because it brings me into contact with this.
I appreciate that you're muting yourself in between because of all the people that are around you chatting. You know, I as you're talking, I'm thinking about coaching, this work that we do, and that there are so many definitions of what coaching is in the world, but the most common one, when I tell people that this is what I'm up to in the world, that they really understandably assume, is that what we're doing is trying to have people make progress and be successful and shiny and cover up all of their humanness, because it seems to me that that's so much of the narrative of the unhelpful side of the narrative of progress that we have. And there's wonderful things about progress. I mean, for sure, let's improve things. But if improving things is kind of constructing a brand, you know, like a show, I'll hire a coach because a coach will help me to look good in the world. And maybe if I look good in the world, I'll feel good in the world, or be good in the world. And as we're finding out from teaching what we've been teaching, and then, as of course you'll know, Lizzie, but people watching won't know this, is that we've just spent 2 days in our end of year certification program seeing people coach. And what a miracle it is when any human being, and this is not restricted to this kind of work that we call coaching, when we see the suffering and difficulty and mess that another human being is in the midst of, and we're able to be in contact both with the suffering and the difficulty and the beauty that's right in the heart of it, because every kind of situation we find ourselves in, us being human, has both of these. It has our difficulty at the incompleteness and all the ways the world isn't the way that we want it to be, and it has our goodness right in the heart of it. And it's such a gift to be able to name that and welcome that in another person, to effectively make the move of, I see your brokenness and your beauty, and your brokenness and your beauty are not separate from one another. And how do we do that? Because we see our own brokenness and our beauty too. And when we come from here, we can be so much more truthful and kind with one another, and we don't have to fix other people in order to turn away from ourselves, which is pretty much, it seems to me, is the often move. We see in other people what we don't want to see in ourselves, and we want to fix them up. And we don't have to fix anyone up. We simply have to meet them. And that's what's so beautiful about this invitation, is to see that meeting one another involves being truthful about ourselves. See, you're on the move now, so I'm going to keep talking whilst you navigate from one part of the hotel to another. Really being in contact with one another means telling the truth on ourselves. And it's the hardest thing to do, because for very good reason, from a very early age, all of us learn that telling the truth of ourselves completely is unacceptable. It's how we get kicked out. So I don't know now, Lizzie, if you're in a place where you want to join us again.
I'm kind of settling myself back down again. The very war suddenly got super loud, and it wouldn't have been nice for anybody to have to endure that. But yeah, what you're saying, Justin, about, you know, when you sit with somebody and they've brought something to you that's difficult or challenging to them, to not try and fix it feels so counterintuitive, and it's of course comes from such a good place. But I think I've, you know, said this before many times, it feels to me like as I try and fix something, the inherentness of me trying to fix something is I'm interpreting it as that the person is, there's something wrong with them, otherwise they wouldn't need fixing. And so bringing this narrative of the truth, as you say, that it's just true that we are never not broken, being in contact with myself, and having the faith that this never not brokenness is humane and alive and like oxygen to us, as we can bring our own never not brokenness to another person, it feels like it opens up a whole new realm of how somebody might believe themselves to be as a being. And it also works for us too. It works for the person sitting in the coach of holding in the seat of the coach, maybe, of holding that perspective, holding that understanding of being, of beingness, so that we are an invitation to ourselves and other people of existing in this way. And continually refining and redefining the way that we interpret the world, so that this kind of freedom, so one of the lines was that Akhilendeshwari whispers to us of freedom in those really big difficulties. And it feels to me like we can interpret the things that come to us as bad luck or difficulty or being doomed or feeling really kind of victimized by our circumstances. And if we can relate to them as part of this never not brokenness, it really changes everything about how we feel, how we're interpreting things, how we address things, the kind of conversations we might have. And so there's the suffering, this inevitable part of human suffering that is there, which is to suffer. But then when we put our interpretation on that is that there's something wrong with it, it feels to me like that's the part that kind of loads a whole other, it's bad enough to suffer, but then to put a whole other layer of interpretation on that there's something wrong with the suffering and that I need to fix it, it creates like a whole other layer of something. And so to be encountering our suffering from the perspective of the never not broken enables the suffering to be a gift rather than something to be got rid of, which kind of isn't possible. Like, you know, if any of us have ever tried to get rid of our suffering by just kind of wiping it over or doing something with it or fixing it, in my world anyway, it's never happened that way. So those intractable problems, they don't get fixed. They are there and we work with them. And I think that's the why this this story is so appealing to me of Aki Nandeshwari, because it feels like an articulation of an everyday opportunity to welcome life, whatever it looks and feels like.
I got reminded whilst you were talking of the many times in my life, and I know I get tempted to do this sometimes, and probably there are a million ways I still do this. But I remember a very extreme form of turning up to arrangements that I had with other people and arriving late, usually because I'd been taking care of something else. And being sure I had to make up a cover story. Like, my cover story could never be, I'm a human being, and like all of us, I'm caught in competing commitments, and it's sometimes difficult for me to tell which is most important and which is not, and I was looking after this, and I'm here late for you now. And in its more extreme form, I just make something up. Car broke down. The dog ate my homework. You know, things with that kind of superficiality about it. And then it felt, I remember this awful feeling, a feeling like I'm caught here, because if I reveal the truth, if I spill the beans on myself, I'll be abandoned. I won't be able to live with the shame of just being ordinary. And of course, I didn't imagine that it was ordinary to be somebody who has trouble getting somewhere on time. And which is revealing to me, by the way, that very often part of the trap here is that we at some level know that we're broken, but we think that nobody else is. So if I let on to my own brokenness, it would reveal that I'm the only one who's in this difficulty. And then, so the truth of it is that any time that I've let anybody else know that I'm in trouble, what's happened is I've been met. It's what's brought me into relationship. Or when I've let somebody know that I love them, which is a very vulnerable thing to do, or when I've said I need help, or when I've said I'm scared, or when I say, I'm sorry, I messed this up. And for such a long time, it felt like I would die if I did that. And what Aki Nandeshwari reminds me of is that we die when we don't do it. Like all of my moves to shore myself up and to imagine that I'm the only one who's like this, of course, separates me from the rest of humanity. That's Aki Nandeshwari's gift, is she says, we're all this all the time. Let's meet in the midst of it. So I realize I'm becoming more and more, at least in my own life, gradually, with many lifetimes of practice left to do, getting better at revealing my own broken heart and finding out that that just brings me into the community of broken-hearted people, which is all of us.
Yeah, and it's bringing up that saying for me, Justin, you know, don't do your dirty washing in public, or don't wash your dirty linen in public, I think is the thingy. And there's this kind of really cultural big ceiling thing that we're not supposed to say what's really going on for us. And I'm with you. It's like every time I do that, I think I've never been met with the thing I think I'm going to be met with. You know, I think I'm going to be met with the exile, or the oh yes, now you need to leave. You know, now you're deeply unacceptable. It's like, it's never happened, and yet I still fear it. And I'm also doing my best to practice being very open with people about the place that I'm in and what's happening to me, and kind of also admitting like my flaws as well. You know, even just stuff that's not like a trauma or even that a bigger deal, but saying I'm a bit half-baked sometimes, or I don't necessarily do the washing up after we've had dinner, or like I feel the shame even now, like a person who doesn't do the washing up, my God. And I feel like, and sometimes I don't put the recycling in the right part of the bin because it's dirty and I haven't washed it up. Like I'm lazy sometimes, and it feels like I can feel the shame as I say it. And I also know that whenever anybody has said anything like that to me, I feel like a deep sense of connection and relief that I'm not kind of alone in my half-bakedness or my falling below the standard, falling below any kind of imagined expectation, or even a spoken expectation as well. So I feel like I'm practicing that more and more and more. And as I practice it more, I get the kind of evidence that I'm not outcast and that I'm not a deeply unlovable, unacceptable human being. And that's what I'm loving about Akhilandeshwari, is that she is, this goddess is one that welcomes all of it in oneself and in other people as well. And as we obviously accept in ourselves that we're a bit lazy, other people's laziness doesn't seem like something to criticize, but something to say, ah, I see that. I can join you there, rather than be kind of pushing it away. And it seems like that's the kind of essence of projection, is that until I own the parts of myself, I have to push it away in others, otherwise I'd have to see it in myself, and I can't bear that. And I'm really appreciating that right now.
There's so much to be said for learning the beauty of our unfinishedness. Because one way of coming at this also would be, let's all go on to admitting how messed up we are. Like, it's a shameful thing. It'll be like a shame fest. And of course, shame is part of it. But it's just really ordinary. I'm feeling a very big advocate at the moment for the holiness of the ordinary. It's very ordinary to be limited. And in a way, that's why I prefer the version of Akhilandeshwari, who's not a goddess, because I think part of the trouble that we have, us human beings, is that there's a secret way in which we think we ought to be God. I ought to be able to shape the world exactly the way it's meant to be, to never fail at anything, to have everything together, and for things to happen just because I imagine them. Like, we have this story about ourselves, and that would be being a perfect person, that any time that's not what's happening and I'm falling short, I ought to be ashamed. And then I have to hide myself away. And I suppose maybe that's why Akhilandeshwari being a goddess is also helpful. But I also just want her to be human like us, and to go, there's something extraordinary and divine about all living beings, and human beings are a part of that. And part of the, I think I'm getting the point here, Akhilandeshwari, part of the divinity is its messiness, is its incompleteness. And there was this beautiful line in a poem that you and I read here in Turning Towards Life a few weeks ago by Thomas Tranströmer, where he says, you'll never be complete, and that's as it should be. So Akhilandeshwari is even the step beyond, which is the beauty of our heartbrokenness, which Parker Palmer, whose work I also love, says it's our heartbrokenness, it's our soft tenderness of our heartbrokenness that allows us to be in contact with anybody and anything. We didn't have that. We'd just be like separate from the world. And I'm suddenly remembering being at school and being in a maths lesson with a teacher I really liked, and he asked a question, and I put my hand up to answer the question. I was like, oh, I'm going to answer the question. And I was so excited about answering the question that I didn't hear that somebody else answered the question and the class had moved on. And I was sitting there with my hand up. And eventually the teacher turned to me and said, yes. And I said, oh, it's, 33 and a half, whatever it was. And he, who was one of the kindest people I'd ever met, turned to me and said this most shaming thing. He said, we've already answered that question. Like, how stupid are you? And the reason I'm just bringing it up right now is to recognize, I suspect that what was going on was that there was a way in which he was ashamed that he had taken so long to get to me. And in being ashamed himself and not simply saying, I'm so sorry that I didn't come to you. This is what happens when we're not in contact with our own shame, is we just pass it on and pass it on and pass it on. And of course, the pressure on a teacher is to use shame rather than to own up to, oh, I'm so sorry, I left you. So I think why I'm bringing this in here is we need this for us, but maybe it's only when we know our own brokenness that we can truly be kind, that we can give up. This is what you were saying about projection. We can give up projecting all the things that we think we ought to fix in ourselves onto, you know, into fixing up other people or criticizing and then judging them. And we can say, oh, that place in you, I know that. Welcome to being both divine and human at the same time.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, Justin. And, you know, it's really moving to feel like little Justin. I always love your stories of when you're little. And I also feel like, this thing about gods and goddesses as well, is that my perception anyway is that that's not outside somewhere. And that even the term goddess is like metaphorical as well, like as if there is a part of us that gets uncovered, a goddessness in me that gets uncovered because the goddess Akhilendeshwari exists in the world, if you like. And I think you could exchange the word goddess with gift or something. You know, it's like a givenness of ordinary humanness, that there's divinity within us. And of course we can turn anything into a standard, like we're just experts at that. But it feels to me like the ordinariness of being, of, it's funny because I'm feeling into like the ordinariness of brokenness and how it's not glamorous to talk about how broken I might feel today. You know, it's like the opposite of glamour. And I think the word goddess has this kind of slightly floaty kind of perfect person aura thing around the word. And what I'm appreciating though is that there's an ordinariness in this that feels like an invitation to the everydayness of our divinity. And that divinity is not on high, divinity is not outside, divinity is not on a pedestal. It's like the very fact that I'm wandering around here and it's a bit noisy and I really care about doing this video, and there's suddenly somebody hysterical laughing in the background, and not excluding those ordinary kerfuffly moments of life from the depth of divinity that I feel to be in the conversation with you. Knowing that to be welcome too. You know, I could be kind of thinking, oh, this is all wrong and it shouldn't be like this and I should have taken more care to find a good place. And but you know, the fact is I went to a really wonderful friend's hen do last night, and I'm a bit exhausted and it's all a bit last minute. And you're in a room that's got a load of rubbish in it from yesterday. And I'm in a breakfast room in a substandard hotel in London. You know, it's like, this is how life rolls. And to be intimate with life in all of its kerfuffliness and ordinariness and non-glamour, and being disclosive about the imperfections of things, feels to me like a deep ordinariness that deserves far more articulation and welcome in our world, into the kind of transparency of our relationships. And I think this is why I'm really enjoying doing these videos with you, Justin, as well, because it feels like a really beautiful invitation for us to be ourselves and to share ourselves with others in ways that are a welcome to it all. And the braver we can be about our own kind of encounters with life and our own shame and our own everything, it's like, you know, people feel welcomed into that. And, you know, we had yesterday, so part of our coaching program, for those who are watching, we have people come who know of us who want to experience our coaching, and they come and help by being guest clients for the people certifying from our program. And there's a wonderful man here yesterday, and I said, oh, how do you know us? Actually, Justin, I haven't told you this yet. I said, how do you know us? He said, oh, well, I kind of did a bit of a research on integral theory, and then I started watching Turning Towards Life, and I thought, oh, this is so interesting. I'd love to come and see what this is. And I thought, oh my goodness. And, you know, from my perspective, I think it's a miracle that even one person listens to what it is that we have to say, let alone somebody actually arriving in a place to help with a process that we're in because of something that he's watched online or read in, you know, on our page or whatever. And it's such a beautiful thing that even just one person being moved and somebody's life being in contact with our life because of this feels like if there was nothing else that we did, it would be kind of okay.
Yeah, I'm really with you. This is the last thing I want to say today is how much trouble we have in our own lives and in our wider culture by this insistence that cleaning everything up all the time, that making everything shiny is better. And I'm really all for fixing up what we can fix. But more and more I'm seeing that the cover-up that's required, that mostly what we're doing when we're doing that is a kind of cover-up, which is if I have gorgeous enough clothes or a gorgeous enough identity or a gorgeous enough life, somehow, I don't know what we think, then people will want me and accept me. And what we're doing again and again as we do that is moving further and further and further and further and further away from what the truth of being a human being is. And I've been, I have met some very, very glamorous people. And when you speak to them about their lives, they all get out of bed with their hair tousled in the morning and, you know, trip over the bath mat and forget their keys. And because, why am I saying this? Because it's the truth of all of our lives that we're broken and messy. And so I too love that we're doing this call from the midst of this venue where we're running our coaching course and you're sitting in the middle of the dining room. But here we are showing up for the practice. You know, I think that's the point, is we're showing up together for the practice, and what a blessing that it can touch some people as well. So I'm very, very glad to be continuing this.
Me too. So next week I might not be in a clanging breakfast room and a lobby. Who knows?
We might be in our shiny 3D virtual reality studio, Lizzie.
I'm gonna get a green screen with some kind of glamorous jewels behind me or something.
I want to say thank you to you. I want to say thank you to everyone. And I want to remind anyone who's watching this that you can always find all of the sources that we're reading and all of the recordings, now 41 of them, at our website, which is just turningtowards.life. And on that website, you can also get access to our Facebook group where people chat to one another, and also where you can join us live. Some people are joining us live as we're doing this. And you can find out about the kind of coaching that we do and teach at thirdspacecoaching.com. And we will be back almost certainly at 9 a.m. UK time next Sunday morning in our smartest of smart stuff. And we'll see you then.
Can I just say one more thing, which is that I am teaching along with Sue on the 1st and 2nd of October in Hammersmith. So it's a 2-day program that's an introduction to the work of Third Space and our coaching programs. So if you have any questions, you can get in touch with me. You can private message me if you want, I think, from the Facebook page that this is posted on. And or you can email info@thirdspacecoaching.com if you want to know anything further or to find out more details. But it's in Hammersmith. We booked our little venue and we are ready to welcome people, and we have a few people booked on already, but we have probably about 7 more spaces if anybody wants to come. And we would love we'd love to be with you if you would be interested in finding out more about how this whole coaching thing works.
It's going to be wonderful. Thanks, Lizzie. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Justin. Bye, everybody.